Welcome to AMA Resource People Podcast, the COVID-19 edition for Friday, the 3rd of April, 2020. I'm Tara Diamond, and I'm joined by my AMA teammates, Tom Reid, Head of Policy and Public Affairs, and Ben O'Brien, Head of Workplace Relations. This podcast provides short Q&A-style information for AMA members on workforce and employment matters. The podcast is general in nature and does not take into consideration your organisation's or personal situation. And please keep sending in your questions in via email to membership@ama.org.au. Well, let's get into the questions because quite a lot's happened in the last 24 hours. Tom, we'll start with you. Could you give us an overview of what the Attorney General announced last night and then subsequently what AMA has written to Australia's Attorney General and Minister for IR, Christian Porter, yesterday afternoon on?
Sure, Tara. So the announcement yesterday was relating to some advice sent by the Fair Work Commission on Wednesday evening that they will look to do a mass variation of 103 industrial awards, and that mass variation will introduce flexibilities into those awards similar to that we've already seen made to the Clarks Award, the Hospitality, and applied for the Restaurants Award as well, providing flexibility around working arrangements in order to respond to the COVID-19 crisis. Now, there's a couple of problems with that from a resource sector perspective. The first one is that 17 awards were not included in that list of awards that they're making mass variations to, and all of those 17 awards excluded related to the mining, resources, construction, and transport sectors. So that's quite a disappointment for our industry. The justification for doing so is partly because our sector hasn't received enough of an economic or an employment impact to justify doing so, which is an argument that we certainly don't accept. And perhaps more to the point is that a large part of our industry is already covered by enterprise agreements, and therefore any variations made to awards wouldn't really provide any flexibility or any benefit to those employers with enterprise agreements in place. So AMA took the step to write to the Attorney General yesterday to recommend that the Morrison government consider a broader suspension of the entire industrial awards system, as well as provisions of enterprise agreements. Our justification for doing so is that we've heard from a number of our members that the types of award variations being made don't really offer them any, or wouldn't really offer them any flexibilities anyway, due to the consultation clauses that are still in there. And secondly, the fact that employers and employees covered by enterprise agreements, as I said before, simply don't see that benefit. So that proposal from AMA is certainly getting a bit of attention, and we're quite comfortable with the attention that it is getting because as the economy and the labour market continues to suffer the impacts of the COVID-19 crisis, it might very well be the case that we need to look outside the box a little bit beyond what we're already doing and think about, well, what can we really do to provide businesses across all sectors and regardless of the types of employment arrangements they've got in place, some real relief from regulatory burden and some real ability to make quick decisions around operational responses that will save jobs and keep businesses open.
Thanks for giving us the update on that, Tom. And of course, there are three levels of regulation in enterprise agreement modern awards. And we haven't been calling for the removal of the baseline regulation, which is the National Employment Standards. So those would continue to be at play. But Ben, I really want you to pitch in on this one because Attorney General made an announcement yesterday, but what's happening practically and what do our members need in terms of support to make crucial business decisions through this time?
Well, I think the proposed changes to the 100 plus awards that we've seen proposed by the Fair Work Commission, I've heard them described as, you know, more progress has been made here than we've seen in 30 years in the IR system in Australia, which I think might be an overstatement of the effect of what's being proposed by the Fair Work Commission. So really the proposals are that firstly, people should be allowed to take annual leave at half pay. And that's certainly something that employers and employees can arrange to do under awards already through a combination of annual leave and leave without pay. So the effect of that, I wouldn't have thought is going to be a huge benefit for people. It's certainly better to have it than not have it, but I think maybe the effect of that is being overstated. But I think the more important one is the concept of unpaid pandemic leave, which is really like a form of personal leave which is unpaid. And what that does is effectively attach certain workplace rights to this concept of unpaid pandemic leave. So it is a little bit different from leave without pay, which people would otherwise be able to access by agreement with their employer. But certainly that, to me, seems to be a benefit that has been created it benefits employees potentially rather than business. So those things, I think, are not necessarily huge advances in the IR system overall, but simply responses to something that some employers and, more to the point, employees are struggling with at the moment. Because really, from an employer's perspective, the matters that are really critical at the moment are being able to arrange work more flexibly. And we're really talking there about rostering. Enterprise agreements are not able to be changed very easily. Certainly, what would be a welcome addition from business's perspective is for some kind of statement to be made, perhaps by the Fair Work Commission, about how employers should be going about some kind of expedited enterprise agreement approval process that would be supported by the Fair Work Commission. Now, I've seen that the Fair Work Commission is acting very, very quickly on these things in any event, but certainly that is a big, big concern for business at the moment. They're operating under enterprise agreements that were negotiated and contemplated for normal business operations, and many of which just aren't able to accommodate the types of scenarios that we're seeing coming out of the COVID-19 crisis.
Thanks, Ben. And speaking of those restrictions and those rosters, we should get back onto the topic of travel restrictions, because that's been the hot topic that we've been providing information to members this week. Tom, there's a fair bit that's happened in the last 24 hours, particularly the WA government last night. Can you give us an update on what's been unfolding?
Sure, Tara. So the West Australian government has released a statement basically confirming what we had already been advised of by both the Premier's office and also the Minister for Mines and Petroleum. Basically, the West Australian government will upgrade its border controls from 11:59 p.m. on Sunday night, so effectively from Monday. Any resource sector employees travelling in and out of the state will have a greater list of requirements or greater evidence to be provided that they are indeed a critical resource sector employee. I should mention that the new travel directions haven't yet been published on the West Australian government's website. As soon as those directions come through, we will advise our members to exactly what they say. It's really important for our members, as they're navigating these border controls, that they do look at the official government directions and don't just take what they might see in a summary. I've seen a few summary fact sheets be sent around, as well as press statements or comments to the media generally from different ministers and premiers. It's really the official directions being issued by the state and territory governments that give you a greater insight into what the controls will be and the sorts of things that you need to do to move essential workers through the different state borders. For example, Queensland at the moment is the only state that's actually updated its border restrictions direction to reflect its new position on the tighter controls. So if you go to the Queensland government's website and find your way through to the COVID-19 travel advice, there is a link there to the border restrictions direction number 3. And down at paragraph 22, it actually lists 24, I beg your pardon, actually lists the criteria in which FIFO employees need to have in order to successfully enter the state for work.
Thanks, Tom. Just two more quick questions from us today. Ben, in terms of the travel restrictions, we're getting a lot of feedback from members, particularly in jurisdictions like Tasmania. Can you give us another insight into what's happening practically on the ground in relation to these change and unfolding travel restrictions?
Yeah, one development that we heard about yesterday was that employees returning from work, returning back home to Tasmania, were being required to self-isolate in a hotel rather than being allowed to self-isolate at home. So that's a bit of a change in approach there, and not something that was necessarily outlined or communicated from the Tasmanian government. And then further to that, some of the effect of these announcements that are being made about hard border closures, the effect that that's having on employees who are currently working interstate, that we're hearing that employees are doing things like threatening to walk off the job in order to get home before the border closes, because they are concerned that they might not be able to get home at all and be kept from their families for a period of time. Now, I think that's an unlikely scenario, and that once the details of these hard border closures are actually published and known, I think we'll see that people will be able to travel home. There may be a self-isolation requirement that attaches to that, but I think that's a problematic development and possibly one of the consequences of what we're seeing at the moment in terms of governance by press release.
Yeah, okay. And one last one, perhaps for you, Tom. How do these travel restrictions apply in the maritime environment?
Well, we have had a number of inquiries from maritime members of AMA. The core area of contention is really, should those employees be considered exempt under the specialist skills exemptions for the resources sector broadly, or can they fall into the category of transport and logistics, which provides a much broader area of exemption and potentially less requirements on those companies to isolate people for 14 days before they start their shifts. So AMA's view is that the transport, freight and logistics category is the appropriate category in which maritime crew should be seeking exemptions through the West Australian border and also other borders that they might be crossing into. And this is simply because, in our view, maritime crew, how they're treated from a quarantine, from a health management perspective and from a preventative measures around the COVID-19 pandemic, it shouldn't really matter too much around what sectors they are actually servicing. And most of the measures that currently apply to resource sector FIFO workforces, it's quite clear that those measures are intended for people operating on remote onshore mine sites or those who are traveling to and working on fixed offshore platforms, and that the maritime support sector that supports the resources industry should really be considered under that transport, freight and logistics category.
Thanks, Tom and Ben. We're going to leave it there for today. We'll be back to you soon to be able to provide you information on the latest developments in the Resource People podcast. Take care.